Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Was that, which one of us did you have muted there?
I didn't.
No, it was hit record.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
I've just pressed record, thank goodness. I remember that bit.
Well, David Law's pressed record, which means we're good to go for our sixth daily podcast of Wimbledon 2019. Myself, Catherine Whittaker, Matt Roberts, David Law, both sat opposite me. The reason you're hearing me present this thing is because David Law looks an absolute shell of a man. I mean, I've seen David Law look a shell of a man many a time over the last 12 years, but I've never seen him with tie undone. It's a state of sort of despair and dishevelment I have rarely seen.
I'm leaving.
It's for good reason, though, isn't it, David?
Yeah, yeah. It's all in a good cause. It's all in a good Brummy cause of 3 hours and 56 minutes or thereabouts commentating on Dan Evans. Going a breakup in all 5 sets and losing 3 of them, ultimately in an absolute epic on court number 1, 6-4 in the 5th, under the lights. It had everything. It was just, I mean, I feel for him. I do feel for him. And I'm sure right now he'll be just decompressing and talking about it with his coach.
I'm not sure
David
he'll
Felgate
be talking about it yet.
Maybe not, but he'll have to go in the press conference, which will be really tough. He'll be doing that now, but I would hope that he will come away from it at least remembering some of the good bits. And the good bits were A, that he played absolutely beautifully to 6-4, 4-2. He was frankly making João Sousa look ordinary at that stage. The other good bits from an Evans perspective are that he hung in, he survived the course pretty much okay, lost in the end, and the atmosphere was pretty much unlike anything I've ever experienced before. It's the first time, obviously, I've been on court number 1 with the roof on. You were both there as well. You managed to sneak in, which I think is fantastic.
Matt's got like a relationship going with the woman manning the press seats in court 1, or that's what she was doing this evening. I felt like a third wheel.
Good work, Matt.
She kept trying to catch his eye.
Hey, that's the point.
It's not what you know.
Okay. So, yeah, you were in there. And, I mean, they closed the roof at 2 sets all because it was after 8 o'clock at night. It's the gloomiest night of the tournament, isn't it? I mean, looking up above us now, it's grey clouds and it's getting dark, and there's no way they could play that full set or be guaranteed to play that full set as it was. So they closed the roof. They brought the players back out while it was still really dark, and then it was as though somebody said, "Oh, turn the lights on," and it wasn't. And I was expecting this sort of gradual flicker, but no. Somebody pressed the button, and it went way, and suddenly the whole place just lit up like some firework display. And we had the 5th set, and the noise that it created in that stadium with 11,000 people all keeping the noise in. And when Evans ran for that one drop shot and ended up on his face, and then he you had Sousa go to the back of the court and start whipping the crowd up himself and saying, "Come on, get behind me now. I know I'm not British, but come on, look how hard I'm playing." And then Evans, when he finally rose to his feet, I've only heard noise like that a couple of times in my whole career. I don't know how he must have felt. I don't know whether he'll ever be able to reflect on it and take pleasure from it, but it was such a special moment.
Yeah, and the manner in which he lost was pretty devastating.
Well, the match point was incredible, wasn't it? Because he was getting bullied around the court, and I was commentating on it at BBC Radio, and I saw the ball drop a little short and Sosa take one step inside the baseline, and you get ready for the end of the match, and I said he's got a forehand now to finish this, and he put it cross court, and suddenly Evans appeared, hit another forehand down the line, and I said, he's turning the tables, I don't know how he's doing this. Sosa popped up a little ball that just about cleared the net. Evans ran it down and basically ran into the ball and didn't clear the net. Match over.
It's so difficult to hit a delicate touch shot at the end of a full sprint, and he tried to do a little drop shot and
it wasn't the one.
He barely made contact with it, and it just dinked into the net.
He's the one you would back to do it, but I mean,
not
in
that
moment.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
He managed to convert the shot into his depressed moment of despair, though. The sort of the
slump,
the follow through of the racket turned into racket on net, hands on net, head on net,
and
it was all
moment.
In one beautiful, smooth movement,
and then straight into the arms of his opponent for a big embrace.
Oh. And then immediately, as quick as I've ever seen anyone walk off court, and I know, generally speaking, that's considered not a very classy move to leave the court, not wait for your opponent. But I think he was going to cry. I think he was going to break down and didn't want to do it in front of all those people who'd been resting their hopes on him for the past 4 hours. We were sat, the press seats are sat positioned just behind a bank of seats that I think are sort of secondary player guest seats, so not quite player box eligible. Basically, I think we were sat behind a row of Dan's mates. They all had the same haircut.
B-listers.
I don't know if that's the hair that they're doing in Solihull,
well,
David. Are they only doing one haircut?
Look across the table.
It's a bit.
It wasn't
more,
that.
It's a bit more sort of championship footballer than your haircut.
Okay, well, I'll work on it for next time.
But, I mean, they were all, yeah, identikit males.
And then just in front of them, there was a pocket of vocal Portuguese support, wasn't there?
So we felt really in amongst it, and oh my goodness, were they breathing every single moment.
And that was the beauty of it. I mean, you were obviously getting a different vantage point to what I was. I was court level where our commentary box is. It's an even better commentary box than centre court, because if there wasn't a glass window in the way, I could lean out of the commentary box and tap the line umpire on the shoulder. You're that close. But I remember with a couple of points towards the end, which Evans won, when he won, the place just erupted and people jumped to their feet and they were punching the air. And then they were looking around and they were sort of high-fiving random people that they've never met.
They were and they were doing that after Hawkeye calls. Like, not even after shots, like after Hawkeye calls that went in Dan Evans' favour. People were cheering as they'd won the tournament. It was spine-tingling atmosphere.
The indefinable quality of making you care. Isn't it? And Dan Evans has it as much as anybody, any player I can think of.
People like him and Wawrinka has it.
I don't know how.
And it's even more heightened under the roof when all that atmosphere is kept in.
I feel his agony, his angst, his...
Yeah.
And obviously where he's been in his career. And I talked about it a couple of nights ago, you know.
I don't know where it comes from, because...
He's a pain in the arse most of the time.
He's a pain in the arse. I mean, I've done tons of interviews with him, and he's given me absolutely nothing. He's given me no reason to care whatsoever.
Oh, hold on.
Oh, we're going to get locked in again.
The grounds will be closing in approximately 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lock-in.
Please make your way to the exit gates and make sure you take all your belongings with you.
No, I want to do the podcast first.
I think they make exceptions for...
A safe journey home.
Thanks very much.
I think they make exceptions for hardworking journalists. Let's hope so anyway.
Well, thank you.
he's got no right to have us all care as much as he... I mean, he's got right to have us care some, but the extent to which he makes you care is something that is a bit irksome almost. I mean,
we love him, really.
Bizarre.
I just have to say how good Sosa was, because... We did not see the run of four games coming that he put together from 6-4, 4-2 down. And and how fast he is around the court. And he went
even
from
in the fifth,
this just sort of, you know, run-of-the-mill baseliner to just the most devastating mover and hitter of tennis balls and running all over the place. He went to the net about 50 times in the match. It was wonderful.
Because for the first hour, it looked like Dan Evans simply had too much game for him, didn't he? He looked the better tennis player, Dan Evans. But Sousa worked his way into it. And I've always felt like he's a tremendous maximiser. Like, he has sort of wrung everything out of his career. And I think until recently, about 30% of his Grand Slam losses had come against Djokovic or Murray. Right. He used to get these really tough draws. He'd always get to round
third
two or round three,
yeah,
and just play Djokovic or Murray and not get any further. But he started to, I think this year, he's made a couple of round fours now. And yeah, he was tough in that fifth set. Dan Evans was struggling to hit through him a little bit. And he's a baseliner, but he is aggressive, Sousa, because he's always looking to use his forehand as much as he possibly can. And it also turned into a bit of a sort of battle of grunting, didn't it? The louder Sousa grunted, Dan Evans started to grunt, and then Sousa would grunt even louder. It was great fun.
Matt saying Sousa, David saying Sousa, and Pat Cash was committedly saying Sousa for all 4 hours of your commentary.
And I listened to the man himself say his own name beforehand, and it was Sousa. So there we are.
I was just about to tangent off on a topic of conversation from this to say that from a British perspective, the only thing that result today does is make the scheduler's decision easier in terms of order of play for Monday, because I thought Nadal against Evans, that's got to go centre, so who are you bumping of Federer and Djokovic onto court number one? Because in my mind it was an absolute certainty that you'd have Konta, Kvitova, Halep, Goff on centre court. But I've just seen the order of play. It's just landed. And it starts with Sousa, Nadal and ends with Federer, Berrettini, with Konta, Kvitova sandwiched in between.
Mm. Okay.
It's not what I was expecting.
No, it's not what I was expecting. But based on Wimbledon's history of their scheduling on the Monday, they don't schedule two women's matches on centre court.
Ever, yeah. It's held up as the best day in tennis, and in many ways it is, but that means...
Have they never done it? They've never done it?
We need to check in terms of never ever, but certainly...
I've gone back 11 years, and they've never done it in 11 years. Mm. So, but anyway, so Sousa... I'm pretty sure it's not Sousa. Sorry, Pat.
Sousa.
Sousa.
Because I've listened to the man say it himself. I can't say that I get it right every time, but it is Sousa.
Right then. Sousa.
Yeah.
Now plays Nadal, who I am scared of this fortnight. I don't want to get anywhere near him. I don't want to piss him off. I don't want to accidentally shortchange him in a shop. He is fearsome.
Mm, he sure is. And I mean, I do feel like his draw just played him into form and heightened his senses right from the off, and he thrashed Joe Wilfred Tsonga today. And Tsonga didn't look like he used to look, but my goodness, Nadal looks just on it. And also, from what everybody's saying, the court is slow. So, you know,
Nadal's
in theory,
not saying that.
Really?
Yep.
He says he thinks it's the same.
Yeah.
He's been coming here since 2003.
I always get asked this.
he obliterated Tsonga. I was just struck by the lack of hype and intrigue in that match compared to the Nadal-Kyrgios match the other day. I was wondering what that told us. Did it just tell us that Kyrgios is pure box office and we're always interested in his matches? Or was it an indication of how much Tsonga has...
I understand
sort of shrunk
that
as an entertainer and a threat.
Australian TV went with, I don't know whatever network is covering Wimbledon. I think it might be Fox in Australia, but I don't know that for sure. It might be Channel 9 who do the Australian Open, but I have a feeling it's Fox. Went with Kyrgios over Barty, and they were on simultaneously 2 days ago. They showed Kyrgios over there.
Kyrgios against who?
Nadal.
Right. Okay. Well. Were they on at the same time? Those two matches?
Apparently they briefly clashed.
Okay. I mean, look, I have to say I can understand that, because Kyrgios Nadal was an incredible occasion and match, and Barty's was a fairly straightforward one. I mean, it wasn't the same degree of an occasion.
No, but we generally TV tends to go with who they think is the best name, who they think's the best draw, rather than quality of match. Generally speaking.
I mean, Kyrgios against Nadal, that is an incredible lineup of
yeah,
names.
Yeah, it was, but it's caused a lot of fuss in.
Has it?
In Australia. Yeah,
they really?
Can't remember who it was. The Australian. I only know about it because listening to Five Live earlier, there was an insert from the cricket at Old Trafford, which is Australia today, and there was an Australian reporter covering it, and he brought up Ash. In fact, he was asked by Jonathan Overend, who is presenting on Five Live today, how big a deal Ash Barty is, how much she is, her story, her significance is coming across in Australia, and he said, "Oh, she is the biggest deal." He said she's a bigger deal than the Aussie cricket team at the moment, which,
oh, that's cool.
Wow. Which is immense.
I mean, I'm thrilled.
And he then went on to say, and there was a lot of consternation when Kyrgios was shown over her. But anyway, I digress. So Nadal plays João Sousa. What else do we have? Should we stick with the men's side of things?
Just crack on through those scorelines and tell us about them.
Crack on through the results. Well, Luca Pui, Roger Federer, two very easy sets for Federer, followed by a tiebreak set, but a tiebreak set that also felt like a very easy set. Somehow, result never in doubt. Pui was pleasant.
I wasn't on it.
Pui's tennis is pleasant.
It sounded straightforward.
Pui had a break point at 5-all in the first set, didn't take it, and then I think Federer won the next five games.
That's a familiar story, isn't it?
So many times. Whether it's lower-ranked player against higher-ranked player, doesn't take their big chance, and then higher-ranked player runs away with it. Federer's forehand was great today. His backhand was a little bit iffy, I thought. One to keep an eye on because he's got Berrettini.
I was going to say, I haven't really seen a lot of Berrettini. Do you feel that Berrettini can hurt Federer if he plays really well and if Federer is in any way off?
He can hurt him for sure. He has weapons, and Berrettini's come out quite punchy and said, I know I have the weapons to win that match against Federer.
Cool.
He has a big serve, a sort of whippy forehand, which he hits hard. I do think Federer will win, but I think that's Federer's first test. This tournament will be Monday against Berrettini. Berrettini, who came through a five-setter against Schwartzman today, saved three match points. Diego Schwartzman.
Turns out a steak is not the dinner of champions.
Yeah, we went out for a little bit of a team podcast meal last night, and Diego Schwartzman decided to join us. I mean, we joined him. Yeah, he had no idea who we were or that we were there, but we knew he was there.
Very reassuring, though, when you end up in an Argentine steakhouse and a millionaire Argentine and his friends are in there as well. So
yes,
someone with unlimited options and presumably good taste in steak.
Didn't do him much good today, though.
No, he obviously needed a larger steak to get him through that fifth set.
He should have had mine.
David Law went for the largest steak on the menu with no sauce. Literally just a slab of naked meat.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's raining, folks. Could you believe?
It's the second they announced that the public were going to be expelled from the premises, it started raining.
So not only is it dark, all the gates have been locked, it's raining, and we're sitting here with another 13 minutes to go. And I've missed the train home.
Oh, all in the name of Dan Evans.
And Dan Evans has lost after all that. He didn't even win.
Sticking with the men's side of the draw, Kei Nishikori. If anything, actually, I have to say, probably Nadal aside, because as I say, terrified, the most impressive performance of the day, tennis-wise, probably came from Kei Nishikori.
I was on that match. He went 3-love down against Steve Johnson. Lovely moment at the start where the umpire said, gentlemen, please don't throw your racket into the ground. And, you know, we don't want to damage the grass courts here. And Steve Johnson just goes, you might as well direct that to me. Kei Nishikori doesn't smash rackets. He said that right in front of the guy. I thought,
but
what a great bit of timing.
Within a split second, Matt had produced the most excellent video of Kei Nishikori smashing his racket into the ground I've ever seen. It was majestic racket smashing.
It was, Yeah, I think the one and only time he's ever done it.
Yeah.
But it was
serious. I feel
like
he does a racket bounce
smash.
Quite often, though. A little gentle one.
Yeah, so, Steve Johnson, do your research before you start cracking gags. But it was a good gag.
Yeah, good gag, but...
I mean, from three love up, like I say, he was playing nicely. He'd only ever won one set in, I think, about eight against Nishikori before. And from there, Nishikori was just playing Rolls-Royce tennis. He was timing everything. He was moving him around the court. It was like Steve Johnson playing well, Nishikori playing way better.
It looks so smooth, doesn't it, when he's playing like that.
And what was that stat you came up with for Nishikori with straight sets at slams?
Yeah, this is literally a record-breaking tournament for Kei Nishikori. Because Kei Nishikori's been playing Grand Slams for over 10 years.
Oh, all my life, yeah. He's not even 30 yet.
This is the first time he's made it to round four with three straight sets wins when you don't include a retirement or a walkover. God. He's had a couple of occasions where he's had a retirement and a walkover, but this is the first time he's won nine sets out of nine.
And the man that will be taking Nishikori to five sets on Monday is Mikhail Kukushkin. He got the better of Jan Lennard Struff in four sets. I'd say that's a big win for Mikhail Kukushkin.
I'm surprised,
Struff,
yeah.
Dangerous floater.
And it was a match that had a very...
Not anymore, but...
Unfortunate stoppage. There was a very long delay in the match because a 60-year-old female spectator collapsed while watching and had to receive immediate medical attention. And fortunately, she was resuscitated and taken to hospital and... I think okay, but it was a scary moment on court 12, and you never know how that's going to affect the match as well. And Kukushkin did well to keep it together. I think it was in the fourth set.
They were back in the locker room. It had to be completely
all the stands.
Rescheduled,
the
yeah.
stands were cleared, evacuated. Yeah, it was a serious incident.
So that is Nishikori Kukushkin to be played on Monday. Of course, all of the fourth round matches are to be played on Manic Monday. What else? Oh, we've had Fabio Fognini today.
He had a moment, didn't he? Oh, he had a Fabio Fognini moment. Yeah, he actually said that he was put on court 14, wasn't he? And he said at
which isn't great, is
no.
it?
No. And I mean,
14
is. He was strutting around the court peacock style, and apparently he said in Italian, I wish a bomb would come and...
He said some disparaging things about the English. You know, we're not popular on the continent, we accept that. But then threatened to bomb the place, which was potentially a step too far.
And then he said, I do apologise if anybody was offended.
Yeah, he did the classic, if anyone was offended, apology, which, I mean, to be fair, if you're offended by Fabio Fognini threatening to bomb Wimbledon, then I think probably you need the Nick Kyrgios press conference treatment.
But he is serving that two-year suspended... Ooh. Ban given his no suspe- is it suspended,
suspended sentence
suspended
yeah.
sentence given what he said at the US Open
yeah that's a good point
a couple of years ago so he is
these things
on
don't
thin
tend
ice.
To leave so much though do they because
no.
you know when I mean remember when Kyrgios had a bit of a suspended sentence but anyway so Fognini's out. Who beat him again?
Dennis Sangren,
David.
Wasn't expecting
Gird
that.
Gird your loins, people. Dennis Sangren will now play Sam Querrey for a place in the quarterfinals.
I probably deserve
Who's
to do that
Who's drawing
match?
That straw on Monday?
I think I might get that match, given that I keep getting all the epics.
They do put you comically on
the
every
people.
Match involving tall people.
Yeah. It's just... I mean, it's not that good a gag, is it? But, you know, I have to withstand several hours of tennis just because of that reason. Anyway, there we are. I mean, I say withstand. Look, I know it's great and everything, but there are certain matches that you maybe prefer.
Who did Sam Querrey beat today, Matt? Help me out. I wasn't following it with as close an eye
John
as
Milman.
I perhaps could have been.
Yeah,
John Millman, who is on the boat.
Oh, my God. John Millman is rivaling my dad for... captaincy of the boat,
he
I
got
would say.
Thumbs up all round.
Co-captain, co-skipper,
yeah.
I would say.
Perfect.
I didn't even bother asking my dad about John Millman.
He's just in.
He's in.
Yeah.
Why is he so in? And it's because he's utterly reliable. He'd be great company. You know, he wouldn't need to tell him twice.
No
he wouldn't
ego.
Need to tell him once.
Yeah. No, just... you wouldn't need to tell him once. No. He'd eat the leftovers, you know, absolutely no preciousness at
yeah.
all.
And he's got skills as well, hasn't he? I mean, he can tie a knot with a gummy snake in his mouth. Yep. I bet he can do all sorts of other things.
The tongue girl. those are the words I've said to John.
Just to remind anybody, Catherine, as to what we're talking about, what is the boat?
The boat is my dad's mythical, magical, hypothetical boat, which he is the skipper of. It's a rugged, probably like a 32-foot yacht type situation.
He doesn't actually own it, but
no, he doesn't.
If he did, these are people he would sail
with. People he would have in his crew.
Right.
It's just like the indefinable quality of making you care. This is the indefinable quality of being David Whittaker crew worthy.
Yeah. Mary Carrillo wants to be on it. She's written to us to say
there has been an outbreak of argument on the Whittaker WhatsApp group about whose boat Mary Carrillo gets to be in. Apparently, we're all in different boats, and we're fighting over Mary.
Banished. Okay.
Yeah, the one and only Whittaker family sailing trip wasn't a roaring success. Someone left the hatch open. It was all quite damp.
Rain update, folks. It's now raining heavily.
Getting hard.
We're sitting outside. I'm wearing a suit and no jacket, and nobody's got an umbrella, and we're getting rained on. All in the name of the Tennis Podcast. That's how much we love you.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Any other results from the men's side, Matt, from today? No, so we're gonna end on the Querrey Sangren bombshell and move everyone on to the women's tournament sharpish, which started on centre court with Ash Barty absolutely just marmalising Harriet Dart. It was a squeaky bum. Is she going to get a game situation for a while there? Because, of course, we all remember Australian Open, where she failed to get a game against Maria Sharapova. She got a couple of them.
It feels like Ash Barty could play doubles teams on her own at the moment.
Yeah.
And win.
Yeah.
She's that good.
It was almost cruel.
Who's going to beat her?
I mean, when I was thinking about it, I thought only Serena. Mm. If only Serena playing well could beat her today. And Serena played pretty well against Yulia Gerges.
And they would meet in the quarters?
Yeah.
So they're a match away from meeting.
So Serena beat Gerges today. A lot of people were saying it was her best match since Australia. I think she was more explosive against Azarenka and Indian Wells. She hit more winners, but she was clean today. She didn't hit many unforced errors, which was a good sign.
Ash Barty, who's on court two on Monday, by the way, everybody, for the second time.
I'm going to look at this schedule and I'm going to do some proper research about comparisons of years and numbers and stuff, because obviously my initial reaction is... But the universe has sent me a dog at just the moment I was about to reach peak despair.
Security dog has just walked past at just in the nick of time.
That was absolutely perfect. So, yeah, I will hold off on my full rant, it. Buckle yourselves in for Monday, folks. It could be coming. Send dogs. Send lots of dogs. What else have we had? So, yeah, Serena. I watched quite a bit of Serena. I thought she was a 7 out of 10. And I think she's probably okay with only being a 7 out of 10 in round number 3.
Yeah. I think she's pretty good.
Better than she was in round 3 last year.
Yeah. And she hasn't got to face Angelique Kerber in round 4. She's got Carla Suarez Navarro.
Yeah.
Who's obviously a good player, but you'd probably take that over.
By the way, Kerber. I am aware that wasn't Serena Williams' only outing on centre court today, and we were on court number 1 rather, but we will be talking about Sir Andy, and that is official, by the way. It is hashtag Sir Andy. We'll come on to it in a moment, David. I can see you itching
chomping
to claim
at the
credit
bit
for that. We are going to talk about Sir Andy, don't you worry. But first, we must talk about Johanna Konter.
Oh, yeah. She was amazing, wasn't
amazing.
She?
Amazing.
She came
absolutely
back from
amazing.
Set down.
Setting a breakdown, not playing well. I watched it on the telly on pause so I could have the 5 live commentary, David. It was Marion Bartoli in the booth, and I thought her analysis of that was really interesting, really, really interesting.
What was it?
Mostly that it was shot selection letting Konter down, and that she was too static, kind of stuck in the mud, not stepping up to the ball enough. She's not a fan of the Joe Konter slice. She wants to see her 9 times out of 10 hitting over that backhand. And I tend to agree. I think the slice is better than it was, and it can be a weapon, but it can also be exposed, and Sloane Stephens was exposing it today. But it was an absolute, like a lot of her French Open victories, it was a real triumph for the whole mentality and atmosphere that she and David Zavialov, her French coach, have created
Dimitri
together.
Dimitri.
Dimitri, he's French though, isn't he? Shouldn't it doesn't compute in
You're
my
not
head
happy with
Frenchman
that.
Called Dimitri.
Should be David.
Should be David, yeah. Okay. Sorry, right. Sorry Dimitri.
Let's just rename him.
With
fine.
whom I had a lovely chat in Paris, despite the fact that his bottom lip was trembling throughout.
Bless.
But yeah, the whole mentality they've created is one of the responsibility's on you. You get the credit, you get the blame, you have all the responsibility for what you do out there. You have total autonomy and agency over your future on a tennis court. And she took that upon her shoulders, and she figured it out. She
takes some
it
doing
out.
To figure it out, yeah. Against the Sloane Stephens, who was that determined and playing that well early on.
And figuring it out is not something we might have associated with Konter, certainly in the last 18 months.
Oh, I mean, it was French Open last year. She lost first round to Yulia Putintseva out on the now deceased Bullring court. I don't know if they've actually knocked it down, but certainly won't be seeing it again. It's raining harder, isn't it?
And it's pitch black.
She lost out, and this was the match after which we famously had what did she call the British press? It was Bastard Gate, yeah. But in amongst that press conference, I think what led her to lash out against the British press was she was asked about her inability to think of a plan B. And she said it's not an inability, it's an unwillingness. She said, I know my game, I know what works, and there's no point in me trying anything else, pretty much. It was, yeah, that was her answer. And this is just a completely different Johanna Konter.
Yeah.
Completely different approach. So Konter,
but she stuck with it today, and she, like, even in the early in the second set when she still could have lost, even though playing well, she just stuck to her guns and continued to play well. And eventually it was like Stephens just blinked first, and her level dropped first.
And Stephens must be absolutely sick of the sight of Joe Konter. Yeah. Lost
four
to her four times
this year.
I'm not sure they'd ever met before this year. Now,
that is one of those funky quirks.
It's like
in the head-to-head,
I think,
isn't
it? Was it 2007 when Enin beat Serena in the quarters of like 3 of the 4 slams? I think it was. Like, you just get on a roll against certain players.
Konter will now face 2-time champion Petra Kvitova, who I'm a bit annoyed at, because Every Wimbledon, I would always pick Petra Kvitova to do well.
You would? Always. How many times have I made a fool of myself?
We all have. And we've all looked at her this year and gone, well, she's telling us her arm still hurts. If it wasn't Wimbledon, she wouldn't be playing. She's got no form. Okay, this is the slam when we're going to leave Petra Kvitova alone. And she's blooming well going to flip and win
the
thing.
She did it in Australia as well. Remember when I didn't pick her for the Australian Open, having picked her for both Wimbledon and the US Open?
She was, look, okay, she faced unseeded Magdalenette today, beat her 6-3, 6-2, but it was the manner of it. It was a champions-type performance.
Doesn't she know it's not about her, it's about me?
she was wrapping up rallies within sort of three or four shots of serve, return, winner. Just so dominant.
No nonsense
and
whatsoever.
She was a set and a break down, Lynette, and she consulted her notes. I just thought, your notes are not going to help you, I'm afraid. No one beats Petra Kvitova when she's playing like this. I don't care what's on that bit of paper. This is over.
Do you remember when the camera zoomed in on Andy Murray's notes in Beijing? And
oh, that was horrible.
Yeah, he lost it.
I don't think they should do that.
No.
Incidentally, I think we've got about 3 minutes left, folks, before our equipment explodes in the rain. So let's get to the point.
Well, hang on. The point is that Strzitova beat Bertens.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, yeah. Bertens. What do you mean, yeah?
That was the correct prediction that I desperately needed.
Oh, I was thinking, right, Raymond.
The Strzitkova double is on. She's still in the doubles with Shea.
The Barty's still in the doubles as well, right?
Yeah.
So there's two that could still do
the
doubles.
Imagine if Lopez wins singles and doubles at Queens and Strzitkova goes singles and doubles at Wimbledon.
Alison Risk got the upset over Blinda Bencic. That was a lovely match.
That was really good.
It was everything
you'd expect it to be. And I'm really pleased for Alison Risk because everybody's talked about it for a long time being this grass court specialist, but she's never quite had a big run at Wimbledon, which you felt like she could have done.
And she beat Vekic.
And it's happened this year. Yeah, and she was a set and a break down to Vekic that match, which went on, I think it was court one. They christened the roof on the opening day, so, or would have been the second day, wouldn't it? And Elise Mertens beat Chong Wong, which I know was your correct prediction, Matt, but we're not counting it because that's not an upset.
We are counting it.
An upset. Okay, let's get to the meat of it. Hashtag Sarandi. It happened. It was amazing. They won. I can't quite remember. They beat Mies and, help me out, Matt,
Guarachi.
Yeah.
There's an R in there.
It was pretty cool when they walked out together.
It was so cool.
Wasn't it?
It was as many photographers as I've ever seen on Centre Court. Some of the photos that are going to come out in the papers tomorrow of that are going to be awesome because the way they were interacting together was amazing. Some of the points were amazing. Their reactions. I haven't read the press conference, but I saw the little interview they did afterwards, and Murray was talking about them both being younger siblings and that being a sort of bonding element between them.
Yeah, because they were asked who's in charge, and they were like, well, we're taking it in turns because we're both younger siblings, we're both used to being bossed around.
Now, can we talk about how Sarandi came about?
We can.
Allegedly, yeah.
No, David definitely invented that.
Yeah, I definitely put that on Twitter before it penny dropped with anybody else.
Did you?
Yeah. Mm.
And Andy Murray tonight has verified that is the official hashtag of the best mixed doubles partnership that's ever happened.
You're welcome, Andy.
Hashtag Sarandi. and who do they play in the next round? It's sort of irrelevant, isn't it? I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're going to win it, aren't they?
So
the tournament.
Yeah.
Well, they might do.
Well, Murray's out of the men's doubles.
Yeah, and that one was interesting because it almost felt right, didn't it? Because as soon as he signed up to play with Serena, it's like, okay, this is the real roadshow. And suddenly the big, you know, remembering that moment at Queen's when Murray revealed that he was playing with Herbert, and I looked around the room and suddenly, you know, everyone's eyes lit up and this is our story and going to write about it. This will keep us going for the next 4 weeks, this big Murray Herbert story. And as soon as Serena came along, Murray Herbert have dropped down the rankings and out of the tournament.
And there was a lot of sort of self-doubt in that partnership, Murray and Herbert. They didn't know which side to play on. They swapped mid-match, playing on the deuce and the ad side, but there's none of that with Serena because Serena says, I have one rule, I play on the forehand side. So Murray is at home on the backhand
Fabrice
side.
Fabrice Mottin
French Open finalist. Yep.
Raquel Attawo.
Oh, Attawo, formerly Raquel Copps Jones, who used to play with Abigail Spears.
The opponents.
Quite a good partnership. I don't know where that's come
from. That is unbelievable from you, Catherine.
Because I remember a few years ago, where's this Rachel Attawo come from, and why aren't Abigail Spears and Rachel Copps Jones playing? Well, Copps Jones playing together, and it turns out it was the same person.
Can we go in the dry now? Because it's raining really hard.
Just one last point.
Matt's notes are getting all soggy.
One last point on Murray.
Look.
Oi, I'm running this show.
He's got a Matt stat there, and we can't read it anymore because it's all run.
The other sort of slightly nice thing about Murray and Herbert losing, and I wasn't willing them to lose or anything, is that it cements just how special Murray Lopez was somehow.
Yeah, that was
And what
amazing.
A special week that was, That's what a true. Special achievement, and the fact that that was everything that we thought it was at the time, and we weren't sort of just bowled over by the hype and the...
Prediction, Murray and Murray next year.
Well, it can only get better for Jamie, can't it?
You don't think Andy will be focused on singles by then? Or?
Yeah, but I still think Murray and Murray will happen. So anyway... Right, let's go.
Do you, Murray and Murray to win it, or Murray and Murray just to play together?
I don't know, just to play together.
Oh God, is that lightning, or are they testing? Are they testing something?
You got any hail you want to throw?
No, it's too regular for lightning. Right then, Magic Monday on it. That's on Monday.
Yeah.
Anything to say about that? No.
Just tell your mates to listen to us, because why not?
Right then. Okay, anything to add, Matt? No,
leave us a review.
The notes have gone blurry, everything. Oh, dear. We'll try and come back on Monday if we haven't been
washed away.
I mean, we might still be sat here because we've quite possibly been locked in. There is a woman in high viz with a sort of formal-looking hat on
marching
towards
us.
So, this is the 6th of, 13, Wimbledon Daily Podcast 2019. We hope you're enjoying them. We're enjoying bringing them to you. David needs to go to bed now. We're going to be marched off the premises. We're enjoying bringing them to you. We're enjoying getting no sleep at all. And we'll be back with 7 more next week, starting on Manic Monday. Brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We'll be getting Simon Briggs on. We'll be getting Mary Carillo on, hopefully, as well.
So.
Rhea with a Y is our mascot. Rhea Executive, produced by tennisballs.com. As David always says, tell your mates. I don't know if he's mentioned that, but tell your mates. We'll be back on Monday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.